Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, Merry Christmas Eve to all of you. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. Glad you could join us for our one-hour show on this Friday night. It is that time of year where we talk about the lists of the best and worst of everything in 2022. But it's also a time that we also remember and reflect on those familiar faces we lost over the past year. Some are very familiar, some you may not know, but wish you had. And joining me tonight, 10 years running, are two educators, and that is media historian and co-author of the book Watching TV, Wally Podrazik, and pop culture historian Kevin Picorni. Gents, always a pleasure. Welcome in.
Pleasure to be here.
Happy to be here, Dave.
You know, there are so many to talk about, and we're going to go over some detailed background on some of them and just more mentions of the other in the categories of movies, television, music, sports, and those who impacted our lives. Let's kick it off with probably one of the biggest this year was the passing of Queen Elizabeth.
And one of the things that's striking to me about the passing of Queen Elizabeth is that's a figure that for most of the world, that's the only monarch they've known.
Yeah, yeah.
And also that Queen Elizabeth, kind of like a Betty White, just crossed so many different decades of media, etc. And I specifically mention media. There's so much we could say about Queen Elizabeth, her sense of duty, her dedication and all. But I was struck for a moment about the pop culture media aspect, where during the World War II years, she and her sister were on the radio in Great Britain, talking to people basically things are going to be okay.
Comfort food.
Comfort food, indeed. And she definitely displayed an appreciation for and respect for media, even though Winston Churchill didn't want her coronation in the 1950s to be televised. She did. And so that was one of first major world shared events. We were in love with the majesty of the monarchy.
I was going to say, when we talk about media, larger than life personalities, the Frank Sinatras and the Dean Martins and the Bob Hopes that left us long ago, in Great Britain, this is a generation that will never see the likes of a Queen Elizabeth again.
And Queen Elizabeth was savvy up to the end. Amused by 2012. And I was amused back in 2012 where she helped to kick off the Olympics.
Yeah.
With James Bond.
Which is great. I love that.
Talk about a delightful premise.
Yes.
We're all very formal.
Yes.
He's on call.
Yes.
And of course, she accompanies him, supposedly, in the helicopter and parachutes down.
Which is fantastic.
And so that was this is a woman who knows her media.
What a great sport, too. Right.
First of all, I'm still stuck on the Betty White Queen Elizabeth parallel. I can't get it out of my mind.
Right, yeah.
Were it possible for her to play the role of Queen Elizabeth in her some sort of documentary. Yeah. My favorite Queen Elizabeth story that came out during her passing was, I don't know if you guys have heard this, that there was a couple from America who happened to be touring England and came across some border of her estate. She used to go walking with her personal bodyguard almost every day. And they came across this couple from the United States who had said, is this the Queen's property? Are we near there? Her bodyguard answered, yes, absolutely. And have you met the Queen? And the bodyguard is just all tongue-in-cheek between the two of them.
Yes,
says, well, why, yes, I have. And he was, talking about her sense of humor. And they were so taken with this man who had met the Queen before. They asked Queen Elizabeth if she would please take a picture of the two of them with the Queen's bodyguard.
Yeah. And then she said, I'd like to be a fly on the wall when they realize that it's me.
Exactly.
That's me. Madeleine Albright, 64th U.S. Secretary of State from 97 to 2001, first woman to hold that post. Mikhail Gorbachev, Ivana Trump, who was former President Donald Trump's first wife. Orrin Hatch, longest serving Republican senator in U.S. history. Bernard Shaw, CNN's first chief anchor when the network was launched in 1980, where he stayed for another 20 years. We are talking about those we lost in 2022, and there's much more after a look at your Friday night traffic. Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. We are talking those we lost in 2022 with Wally Pedraza, Kevin Picorni in studio. Movies and Broadway. The next one here, we're going to talk about Sidney Poitier.
Did you know that he spent an early part of his career trying to lose his Bahamian accent? That where he had been born and raised, and he was even knighted in the Bahamas. But my very favorite, guess who's coming to dinner, Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, is just still. I cannot flip through stations without seeing that show up, and it's just something that I absolutely need to watch.
Angela Lansbury, a lot of people in a later generation know her from TV's Murder, She Wrote, and that probably what defined her to millions of people. But, I mean, big in movies, big in Broadway.
In fact, I noticed that Webster's had gaslighting as the word of the year. Well,
yes,
she was in the movie Gaslight.
That's awesome. Yeah.
She was playing a Cockney servant. But more important, she was in a whole raft of movies, including the original version of The Manchurian Candidate. She was the harsh, demanding figure. And in fact, what's interesting is that she was described in those early days as someone who wouldn't be the soft romantic. She would be the hard-edged character. And then, of course, she becomes Miss Marple, Jessica Fletcher on Murder, She Wrote. But in between, there were so many wonderful instances of Disney-type musicals and performances, and, of course, on stage. I mean, you've got Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, very associated with Disney, by the way. Yeah, absolutely,
yes.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And you've got her starring as Maude back in 1966. Probably the most impressive aspect of her visage is that she was eternally herself. That is, when she was playing an older character, you bought it. She was playing a little younger character, you bought it. She was whomever she should be. She had such a confident and reassuring presence. And, you know, the formula of Murder, She Wrote is one where I could watch it repeatedly. You know what's going to happen because the character of Jessica Fletcher knows what's going to happen.
True. That's actually
and that's
true, yeah.
Part of the fun.
Actor William Hurt, actress Anne Heche, Robbie Coltrane.
Let me jump in with Robbie Coltrane because I love the fact that you, I know him first from a kind of obscure series called Cracker, which was a forensic psychologist out in Great Britain. He was in a couple of James Bond movies, very commanding presence. He was playing this Russian mafioso type. Oh, and by the way, he was in Harry Potter.
Right.
Probably how most people would know him.
Peter Bogdanovich.
Peter Bogdanovich is one of those directors who had this wonderful run. You've got Last Picture Show, Paper Moon, What's Up, Doc? Every one of those was, I recently was watching What's Up, Doc? Again and said, this is funny.
Yeah.
This is done with such assurance and confidence. And there was also an obscure one. I saw Targets, which was about a killer, a shootist.
You know, when I saw his credits in The Sopranos, I was like, is he directing this? What is he doing? And I just realized he played Dr. Melfi's psychiatrist in the show.
And that was sort of like the second, third career.
Yes, it was.
Where he would come in, because if you look down your IMDb list, you'll see one episode, one episode, one episode, because he's coming in because he also had a very strong acting
presence. That's very
true. You like to see him on screen.
Ivan Reitman. So films he directed, Meatball, Stripes, The Ghostbusters, wow. Twins, Kindergarten Cop, Dave Jr., National Lampoon's Animal House, Space Jam, Private Parts. The list is endless, but a legendary Hollywood
director.
The
most quoted movies you just listed.
Yes,
right there.
Yeah,
how about it?
It's true. Academy Award winner Louise Fletcher, Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Sachin Littlefeather. Which, you know, she was the actress in 1973 during the Oscars that she came out to accept or deny Marlon Brando's Oscar. But now she passed away. She spoke eloquently to, you know, to backdrop of like about the mistreatment of Native Americans by the film industry and beyond. But her sisters have now come up and are now disputing her heritage. Sally Kellerman, the original Hot Lips from the movie MASH, and Back to School.
And we were just talking about Back to School, because that's the image that, she was Rodney Dangerfield's girlfriend.
Yes.
And there's this wonderful scene in Back to School when he's being grilled. He has to pass the oral finals.
Yes.
And she gives him the pep talk speech.
That's right.
Yes. You can do this.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
If Hot Lips says you can.
That's right.
You can.
That's right. We're going to close out with the movies with, a lot of people from mafia movies, the underworld stretch, a lot of them. And I'm going to read through them, but I want to go through them all. Ray Liotta, James Caan, Paul Sorvino, Tony Sirico, Robert LaPone, Paul Herman. You'll know who all these are when we get to all of them, but let's start with Paul Sorvino.
A capo in Goodfellas. Tony Sirico, Paulie Walnuts.
Paulie Walnuts. So the Sopranos thing is Paulie. Robert LaPone, which was Tony's neighbor, who was always suspicious of him on The Sopranos, was Dr. Bruce Cusimano. So this is the guy that introduced him to his psychologist. Paul Herman, who played Beansy on The Sopranos, also gone. Ray Liotta. And I will tell you, I interviewed Ray a couple of times. And the first time I interviewed him was probably around 2014 and 15. And the curiosity for him was, I was telling him that my 14 or 15-year-old son watched Goodfellas with me. I thought I was, 15 years old. We can sit down and watch this thing. Fast forward through a few things. He was so curious what he thought. What did he like about the movie? Did he like the storytelling? Did he like the throwback, the vintage, the nature of the 60s and 70s? Did he like the acting? Did he like the storyline? Was it too violent for him? Like, he asked a million questions, thinking about that decades later, of why he still found this film to be important. He almost like he was doubting it himself.
Really, of all the deaths this year, celebrity deaths, that was probably the one that shocked me more than anything else.
He's a young guy. Young guy.
Yeah.
Still performing. He was in the recent Sopranos movie.
Prequel.
Prequel. Yeah, exactly. James Caan. I mean, what do you say about this guy? I mean, The Godfather, but so many. And I just watched him in Elf.
And Brian's song.
That was my first with him. And when he was lying in the bed talking to Gail Sayers, and what a movie that was. And I think that was, and I'm going to say this, and I don't mind putting this out there, fellas, that movie was the very first movie to make me cry, was Brian's song, without
true story,
a doubt.
Of course,
And now it's Elf.
And now it's Elf.
And also, he's one of those cinematic figures, so that when he was in, like, Honeymoon in Vegas, I mean, basically, just coming on the screen and being James Caan was enough. I mean, he did fine, but it was just enough.
You're gonna love this. This was when he was asked about the character of Sonny Corleone. Who was he trying to channel when he was doing this? He said in an interview, Don Rickles. And it just floored the interviewer.
They were very good friends.
They were very good friends. He goes, but it wasn't the comedic part. It was the drive and just to continue forward, forward, forward. He said, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking of Rickles.
Don said that the first gift he ever received for his first child was from James Caan.
Wow.
Over at the house. We are talking about those we lost in 2022. And there is much more ahead after the news next here on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. That was Kirstie Alley from Cheers, who passed away in early December, preceded by a clip of Chicago's Bill Jackson of BJ and the Dirty Dragon in the Giggle Snort Hotel. And this always struck me when I read these two, Liz Sheridan and Estelle Harris. Not household names, but this is Jerry's mom on Seinfeld and George's mom on Seinfeld. Lost them both this year.
And that the way you've coupled them, and I've noticed this throughout the year, as we were talking about the mobster clusters and all, it's like, we will make connections even if the connections don't really exist.
Yeah.
Because we have connected with these performers on repeated viewings on our favorite shows.
It's true.
And so you have a special extra sigh when you see them passing.
So you think about the relationship on screen with Estelle Harris and Jerry Stiller as George's parents, and Stiller was the second dad that actually was on the screen. Their chemistry, like when they were on, you knew you were going to just laugh your ass off.
Right.
Yeah. Tony Dow also spoke to Tony Dow and Jerry Mathers, Leave It to Beaver. And, you know, Tony, reluctant child star. I think he was more of a sports guy at the time and swimmer.
Diver and a swimmer.
Yeah, yes. Diver and a swimmer. And then went into directing and producing. He had a whole different career. You know, he was a painter. You know, not a lot of people from that era went on to do other things. They just became whatever. I mean, he really kind of kept his foot in the water when it came to television and the movies and the world of art.
And talk about not making it his first and foremost goal in his life to become an actor. It was actually, the story goes, one of their neighbors was applying for the, was auditioning for the part of Dad. Of Ward Cleaver, and so he went to audition, and he said that there's this relationship between their father son. Would your son like to come with me for the audition? He reluctantly went with.
Yeah,
obviously his neighbor didn't get the job,
yeah.
But he certainly did.
You hear a lot of those stories. Nichelle Nichols, she played Uhura on Star Trek, and she's going to be known for the first interracial kiss with William Shatner,
yes.
Of course, on television. Bob Saget, somebody I've met. His wife was a regular on my overnight show when I was doing, she had a blog out there, still does, about things going on around Chicago. She'd always show up in the studio 2 o'clock in the morning, met Bob, moved out west, did an appearance for our broadcast museum
right.
in Chicago.
That's where I was at the same appearance that you and I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And, he was a card. He was a cut-up.
Yeah.
He was a delight. I mean, there were so many, oh, can we do a tug-of-war with a copy of your book and all? Sure, let's do a picture of tug-of-war with a copy of the book.
Probably the dirtiest jokes coming
yes.
from that guy, which was so unexpected. I mean, Full House, you
yes.
know, you had one complete persona, but I mean, when I say the dirtiest, they were the darkest, dirtiest, but most funny. Robert Clary, and I, you know, when I always think about Hogan's Heroes, I think about, okay, this is 20 years maybe after World War II, and it's a comedy about prisoners of war right. in a German camp. And Robert Clary was in a Nazi concentration
yes.
camp.
Yes.
Yes, for
like 31 months.
Yeah.
And he made a very strong point of saying, this was a prisoner of war camp. This was not a concentration camp.
Right.
And you've got to remember the context. If we're coming out of things like Stalag 17, we're coming out of that is theater, movies and such.
Yeah.
And basically it was TV saying, isn't that an interesting concept? But here's the real key. Basically, it is saying, is this unrealistic? That they could have done all that? Well, to the degree that Hogan's Heroes had a mini Pentagon below their barracks, sure. But in terms of real action against the Nazis during that era, it would be in little things, little mess-up things every day, which they didn't even realize were going on. And that sort of was a celebration. As he said, the key was, the Germans were always not the heroes.
Whose production company put this together?
Bing Crosby.
Bing Crosby. Yeah. Bing Crosby, exactly right. From my childhood, Kevin's, to Emilio Delgado from yes. Sesame Street, the Fix-It shop
Luis.
Owner. Johnny Brown, Bookman from Good Times, kind of replaced the father character. Throughout
the years when you and I, during a given year, knowing that we're going to do this at the end of the year,
yeah.
I will get a buzz on my phone occasionally from you. Announcing who it was that had passed. And really, I don't know if you're aware of this, but with me, it's a competition. I have to get it in to you before you get it.
Yeah.
And when you sent me Johnny Brown, all I could think of, and I responded because I saved it for you to look at, his nicknames on the show?
No, what was it?
Booger
or
buffalo butt.
That's right. I forgot about that. Did you know that as a scholar, Wally? Did you remember that?
We sometimes tactfully forget things.
Forgot about that. Howard Hessman, WKRP, obviously, Johnny Fever. He was on One Day at a Time, head of the class, did movies, other television. John Aniston, more recently, Jennifer Aniston's father, actor for decades on Days of Our Lives. Robert Morse. From Mad Men, more of a Broadway performer.
Right. That's a Broadway person who happened at the end of the career to have a truly memorable on-screen persona, which most people would probably then remember.
Let's move on to sports here. So one of the most familiar names to anyone that's listening right now is probably Vin Scully.
Absolutely. From the Brooklyn Dodgers all the way to the Los Angeles Dodgers, working under Red Barber for the first few years of his career until Red Barber left the Dodgers and went over to the Yankees. But Vin Scully, the mainstay of Dodgers baseball for so many years.
Bill Russell and Bruce Sutter.
Oh, my goodness. Bill Russell, two-time All-American, won a national championship twice. He was the cornerstone of Celtics basketball in their dynasty. Eight straight titles, 11 overall during his career, 88 years old, Bill Russell. You mentioned Bruce Sutter. What Cub fan can't recall a summer day and watching that split-fingered fastball, or as we would say, my brother used to say, it's like it's rolling right off the edge of a table.
Yeah.
Used to love watching Bruce Sutter. There's nothing more exciting than watching that guy come into a game. Hall of Famer, not going to mention any other teams that he went to because I can't stand any other teams that he went to.
Fair enough. Other comedians, Gallagher, Gilbert Gottfried, Louis Anderson. Gilbert Gottfried at the end had a tremendous podcast and a huge following for that as well. Radio Hall of Famers Art LeBeau and Ralph Emery as well. All right, we're going to hit music next after a look at your Friday night traffic. Day Plyer 720 WGN in studio right now. Wally Podrazik and Kevin Picorni. We're talking about those we lost in 2022. So moving into the world of music, Christine McVie, was most recent, but that's huge. Like when you think about Fleetwood Mac. And how many generations that band touched. She was a keyboardist, of course, died after brief illness at the age of 79. Really was considered the heart of Fleetwood Mac.
Vocally and also as a writer as well. So you have about a half dozen of the Fleetwood Mac songs that are your favorites. She probably had a finger in those.
Absolutely. Don't Stop. Got a Hold on Me, Say You Love Me.
Over My Head.
Songbird. Yeah, they're all associated, of course, with her. Loretta Lynn.
The coal miner's daughter, Country Music Hall of Fame. She was, it was the true rags to riches story for any musician, especially for a country music artist coming out of the foothills of coal mining country to the stage in Nashville.
Olivia Newton-John, another amazing, like that was almost like a piece of your childhood kind of ripping away from you a little bit. So thinking of Grease and Xanadu and so forth, but Grease, so iconic. And I got to talk to her a couple times over her life. And both times that I spoke to her, she was in stage four cancer and so humble. And I know she poured a lot of her own money into the Cancer Institute that's named after her there, but absolutely legendary actress. And you know, when you think about that movie Grease, one of the most iconic films of the 1970s, if not of the 20th century. I'm going to move on to Ronnie Spector, somebody else I also interviewed over the years. And, you know, she was an open book every time I talked to her. But, you know, she would get very dark about Phil Spector and her relationship with him. Because, I mean, he was a controlling nut. You call him a musical genius, but really ruined her career after those highlights in the 1960s and kind of blacklisted her from the music scene for so long. But she really came into her own Irene Cara.
And that's an example of someone who was defined a particular song, namely Fame, and epitomized that particular movie, and then there was a TV series that came
after it.
That's
right.
And then she also sort of did it again with Flashdance.
Yeah.
Writing that, and she just had a an irresistible presence when she was performing.
Remember her name, Naomi Judd.
Naomi Judd, mother of the famous Judd singing duo. In 7 years, you know, like, love country music, whatever you want to say, listen to this. 5 Grammys, 14 number one singles, and a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Jerry Lee Lewis, while you saw Jerry in concert.
Yeah, appropriately in Memphis, way from the balcony one time. It was very cool. But what was very strange about it is Jerry Lee, love him, respect him. The fact of the matter is he didn't have the range of like an Elvis or a Johnny Cash and all. So all you had to do was see Jerry Lee once, and you saw Jerry Lee.
Jeff Cook, founding member of Alabama.
Yes, as we were just mentioning in the number of hits that the Judds had in their 7 years that they were together. But how about this? Jeff Cook, co-founder of the group Alabama, they notched 36 number one singles on Billboard's country music.
Ramsey Lewis, legend. Not only was he a legendary performer, but he was also a legend on radio as well. He was also very active in the musical education in Chicago. He founded the Ramsey Lewis Foundation, established Ravinia's Jazz Mentor Program, served on the Board of Trustees for the Merritt School of Music and the Chicago High School for the Arts. I mean, very, very active in Chicago and a legend in jazz, of course. Mickey Gilley,
the inventor of the honky-tonk, if you care to think about that. At least he brought honky-tonks to our regular lexicon. It was the urban cowboy notion and phase that we went through back in the 1980s, and all of those things can be traced right back to Mickey Gilley.
Aaron Carter, child pop singer, brother of Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys. Motown legend Lamont Dozier, a songwriter who crafted hits, huge hits for the Supremes and Marvin Gaye. Jim Seals of Seals and Croft, Bobby Rydell, Andy Fletcher, drummer, founding member of Depeche Mode, Tony Braxton, Coolio.
Coolio is someone that I have an affection for as not only a rapper, but as a TV performer. He mostly played himself. He was one of those performers who would come in as himself. But there were a couple series he was on. He was on the Martin Lawrence series, Martin. He was on Parenthood. And when I talk about presence, sometimes a musical performer is like one of the best you could have for just dropping in onto a series. It's like, I know you. I like you. Okay, I'll watch.
Meatloaf, singer, actor, probably one of the most wide-ranging voices in rock and roll. His hit, Bad Out of Hell, isn't that yours and your wife's wedding song?
Yes, it was. It was our first dance. It was nothing less than shocking to a lot of the relatives, but we were dedicated.
Once again, celebrating the historical figures that we lost in 2022 in movies, television, sports, politics, and beyond. Wally Podrazik, his book is Watching TV. Kevin Pokorny, thank you so much for joining us, and Merry Christmas to you both.
Let me know when you want me to come back in January so we can do the predictions for next year.
Predictions. Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be a great show, though, Dave?
That would be
Let's
a great
predict
show.
Who's going to be. Come on.
Your Blackhawks pregame is coming up next here on 720 WGN.